are made possible by listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, back to school. SUNY Sullivan is launching new micro-credentialing programs, providing students with basic management, marketing, and sales skills needed for programs like the cannabis industry, direct support professionals, culinary and baking, and even drone operator. We speak with SUNY Sullivan's Director of Workforce Development, Jamie Schmeiser. Plus, James B. Huntington is here with local economic perspective. Classical Kit joins us with a preview of tomorrow evening's chamber music at the Chandelier Music Festival. And what's a food bank influencer? Comedian and self-described social justice warrior Christina Wong will explain. It's her performance to benefit A Single Bite at the Catskill Art Space. It's all coming up. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. President Biden will give the keynote speech this evening on the opening night of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. NPR's Tamara Keith says the president is expected to ramp up momentum for the Harris-Walz ticket.
Instead of advocating for his own reelection, he'll be urging voters to support his partner in the White House, Kamala Harris. So Biden is going to say that these weren't just his accomplishments, they were Vice President Harris's accomplishments, too. Aides say the president plans to make a strong case for the Harris-Walz ticket and then, quote, hand off the convention to them.
NPR's Tamara Keith reporting. Former President Trump and running mate Senator J.D. Vance are spending the week campaigning in several key states, including Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Israel trying to finalize a ceasefire and hostage release deal in the war in Gaza. He met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today and with Israel's president. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says the creation of a buffer zone is a key part of the country's ongoing military operation inside Western Russia. As NPR's Greg Myrie reports, Ukrainian officials are beginning to share more details about the incursion as it approaches the two-week mark.
President Zelensky said Ukraine has captured another batch of Russian soldiers inside Russia and, more broadly, was achieving its goals with the military operation. Ukraine hasn't said how many Russian troops have been taken prisoner, but the military recently allowed journalists to visit more than 300 Russian captives in a prison in northeastern Ukraine. In video remarks, Zelensky said Ukraine's August 6th incursion is creating a buffer zone that will make it harder for Russia to attack Ukraine's northeast border region. In recent months, Russia tried to advance on the ground there and was halted, though it has carried on with airstrikes against cities and towns. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Kyiv.
Stocks open higher this morning as investors wait to hear from Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell later this week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow jumped about 95 points in early trading.
The Fed chairman is set to speak Friday at an economic conference in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and investors will be listening for what Powell has to say about the U.S. economy and interest rates. With inflation easing, the central bank is widely expected to start cutting rates when it meets in September, but odds of a jumbo half-point rate cut have fallen in recent days amid signs of economic strength. Businesses that ship cargo between the U.S. and Canada are bracing for a possible railroad shutdown north of the border. A labor dispute between two big Canadian railroads and the Teamsters Union could lead to a work stoppage on Thursday. In preparation for that, the railroads have already stopped accepting some hazardous and refrigerated cargo. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Christians remain the largest migrant group on the planet. That's according to a new report from Pew Research. NPR's Jason DeRose reports. The study also found that Jews are the most likely group to have migrated.
One in five Jews reside outside their birth country. That's far larger than the share of any other religious group, but the numbers look different by sheer size of religious migrant population. An analysis by Pew Research shows Christians make up nearly half of all people living outside their country of birth as of 2020. Mexico is the most common country of origin for Christian migrants. The United States is the most common destination for Christians. Muslims account for nearly 3 in 10 migrants, or war-torn Syria is their most common starting point, Pew found Muslims often move to Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Turkey. Israel is the most frequent origin country for Jewish migrants and also their top destination. Jason DeRose, NPR News.
Ernesto has strengthened into a hurricane again. The Category 1 storm is out to sea and bringing dangerous beach conditions along the East Coast. The National Hurricane Center says life-threatening surf and rip currents are likely over the next couple of days. Caitlin Clark has set a new WNBA record for rookie assists. The Indiana Fever star broke the previous record set in 1998 with her 225th assist yesterday against the Seattle Storm. She tallied a few more during the game. Clark has a total of 232 assists so far this season. I'm Kristen Wright, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their travel card, Venture. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Micro-credentials are short, focused credentials designed to provide in-demand skills, know-how, and experience. SUNY Sullivan is launching new micro-credentialing programs that provide students with basic management, marketing, and sales skills needed for entry-level operations in several industries. And here to tell us a little bit more about those is Director of Workforce Development at SUNY Sullivan, Jamie Schmeiser. We should note that SUNY Sullivan is a WJFF underwriter. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, micro-credentials, these are not full-on college courses. What are they designed to do? To get people like fast-tracked into an industry?
Fast-tracked into the industry, fast-tracked into learning new skills and upgrading their skills. So instead of taking years, it takes weeks or months to get that skill, and then you are automatically certified in that particular skill, and you can go on to get a job or advance your job skills.
Now, SUNY Sullivan and the SUNY program throughout the state has been offering micro-credentialing programs, but there's some really new ones that are being offered that are newer industries and where there is a need for this type of workforce. So let's talk about some of those. First off, Canna Business Management. That's in the cannabis industry.
Yes. So they established, and I'm sorry about my uhs and ums. My speech teacher would be ashamed. The Canna Business Management and the Canna Business Marketing and Sales programs are entrepreneurial classes designed specifically for the cannabis industry. As you all know, that cannabis was made legal in the state of New York, and they have several different programs in the state of New York to help individuals gain some knowledge about the cannabis industry, to do it legally, and to help us provide employees for the cannabis industry. I know there's a lot of factories and growing places and stores opening up. In the last week, I believe 4 or 5 stores opened up in the state of New York. And it's a way to fast track your skills, learn something about running a business, and gain much needed skills for that particular subject.
Well, it's nice to know that in that business, it's not like treated like the fast food industry where you just come on over. Like they need skilled workers.
Absolutely, cannabis is a specific type of product, and so they need knowledgeable employees to discuss it and sell it.
Yeah, and so one of the other programs we talked about before when you were here, direct support professional micro-credentialing, and that is for, well, explain what direct support professional is.
That is for a person wanting to get into the medical field or into helping people that are in need of a personal support person. In other words, entities like New Hope or ARC or the Center for Discovery, they work with autistic children or developmentally delayed adults. They are looking for employees, and they have a great need to have people earn these credentials so that they can work right away for these companies in a great job. Not only that, the providing the DSP credentialing and the course in weeks, this entire course is paid for through a grant. So there's no cost in taking the course. And as you complete each section, there's a DSP 1, a DSP 2, and a DSP 3. You get certified to be a direct support professional, and you earn a bonus of $750 from the state to make you more incentivized to take on this as a career. But if you wanted to move on from that, these courses that you take at SUNY Sullivan are stackable. What that means is if you decide, I want to go to college now and move on to nursing or move on to a medical assistant or move on to something in the medical field, you can take these courses and put them towards your degree. So you're already one step above.
Yeah. So the direct support professional micro-credential, it doesn't involve the medical aspect of it. Is it more on the human contact? Psychology is one of them, intro to behavioral principles. But then,
yes,
as you said,
yes,
this is a pathway toward this other
exactly.
More
you help people with their daily needs, and you help people with, doing things for themselves that they can't do for themselves.
So
if
you were in one of these micro-credential programs, then that would provide you some credit toward these other courses?
Yes. So if you wanted to go on and you found that you really enjoyed doing this, this is a chance for you to advance your career and move up within these companies locally or worldwide. I mean, the credentials that you earn are national credentials. They're not just specific to Sullivan County.
They could transfer.
They can transfer, yes.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Jamie Schmeiser. She is the Director of Workforce Development at SUNY Sullivan, and we're talking about their micro-credential programs. Existing, I guess, micro-credential programs include phlebotomy, bookkeeping, tax preparation, restaurant management, event planning. But a new one is culinary and baking basics. What's in that one?
Yeah, so we have a really great director of our culinary department, Justine, and she comes from a really great place. And we have where you can learn culinary and baking basics. You can get a foot in the door in the culinary industry. And now, you know, Sullivan County has a great need for chefs and cooks. And we have wonderful restaurants here, but we have a great need. And so this is a way for you to get your foot in the door, get that experience, get that knowledge, and start out in that career. There's a lot of people who would love to be a chef or a cook, and they don't know how to do it. You don't need to get a degree, but you need to get some basic skills, and that's what these micro-credentials can do for you.
You need to understand your way around a kitchen.
Yes.
The other one that I find really interesting is drone operator. Tell me about drone operator.
Yeah, this is an exciting course that we're offering this year. Drone operator is so important, not only to law enforcement. There's a great need for drone operators in law enforcement. You have to have the skills in order to just fly a drone. I know they sell them in the toy stores and things like that, but this is a very specific skill. And you have to be able to know how to make a video from your videos that you take with the drone and how to put it all together and how to get licensed as a pilot. You have to become licensed. So this micro-credential course will do that, will help you take your licensing test and give you those skills that you need. It's not only available for law enforcement people or wanting to improve your skills there, but real estate, realtors, showing new homes or brokers, they need the drone skills to do their job better, to provide, you know, we're living in a digital world now and everything is, you know, from the air and digital. So being a drone pilot is a great skill to have.
And then this one partially stacks as well with the computer graphics and graphic design degree.
Yes.
That's offered.
Yes, absolutely. So if you wanted to go on from there, we offer that as stackable so you can transfer that. And you can transfer that to any SUNY college in New York or nationally.
And these micro-credentials and the program, does it also help solve just like an overall enrollment, you know, challenges?
Yes, absolutely. Some people aren't ready to go to college, or in some cases, people don't want to go to college. They just want to learn a skill and get busy working. And this is a great opportunity for both.
And let's remind folks about, you know, school starting on the 26th. Is that right? Next week?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. where can folks get more information about these micro-credential programs? And can they still get started this school year?
Yes, they can still get started this school year by going to sunysullivan.edu or giving us a call at the college, but going to sunysullivan.edu and clicking on application. There's other pages there that'll explain what the micro credentials are and what you need to do.
And it's free to apply. There is a cost associated with some of the micro credentialing classes, but some of them are also, as you mentioned, eligible for some grants.
Yes. The DSP, the direct support professional, is eligible for some grants. And we have some TAP assistance available for basic bookkeeping and phlebotomy, but come by, apply for these classes if you're really interested. We'll help you get started into a great new career or to build your advanced skills.
And you're also offering some scholarships for other courses.
Yes.
That we want to make sure we mention.
Yes. The Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Counseling Associate's degree is an amazing thing that you can have. And I thank you very much for reminding me of that. With our community, with the opioid crisis, this is a complete scholarship to become an alcohol and drug abuse counseling professional. And there is a grant available, full scholarships for you to take the associate's program. It's a two-year program, and you become a counselor.
All right. Jamie Schmeiser is the director of workforce development at SUNY Sullivan. More information about the micro-credentialing and all of the courses and scholarships offered at SUNY Sullivan. Their website is sunysullivan.edu. Thank you. And I'll let you get back to school.
Yes. Thank you. All the way back to school.
All the way down the road. Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
We'll take a break. When we come back, it's Work Shift Live with James B. Huntington, Local Economic Perspective. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi, this is Marco Werman, host of The World. Weekdays at 3, our newsroom connects you with events around the globe. Our reporters in the Americas, Africa, Europe, and Asia get to the heart of the day's news. We bring you international perspectives on issues worldwide and here in the U.S. It's 1 hour each day that broadens horizons and takes you beyond our borders. Join me on The World, afternoons at 3, on Radio Catskill.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, independent grassroots global news. Our reporting includes breaking daily news headlines and in-depth interviews with people on the front lines of the world's most pressing issues. People speaking for themselves, providing unique and sometimes provocative perspectives on global events. Democracy Now!, weekdays at noon, right here on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. It's Monday, and that means we're going to hear from James B. Huntington, local author and economist with some local economic perspective. It's Work Shift Live. Good morning and happy Monday, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
So, James B., the economy. It's making news headlines everywhere we speak. But let's dive in with the Consumer Price Index. What happened there last week?
Yes, this matched the other one and is now down to 2.9%. So, this is for the month of July. The story is officially saying that it's leaving the Federal Reserve firmly on track to cut interest rates. Well, it was like that before, this just reinforces what was getting to be an obvious decision. First time inflation in by this measure has been below 3% in 3 years. And we have some specifics here for you. The ones that went up the most in July were motor vehicle insurance up 1.2%, fuel oil up 0.9%, fruits and vegetables up 0.8%, meats, poultry, fish, and eggs went up 0.7%. The biggest losers were used cars and trucks down 2.3%, airline fares down 1.6%, hospital services down 1.1%, and piped utility gas service down 0.7%. So overall, it was 0.2% average, and food and energy went up a little more than that, but that came in, the items excluding food and energy also came up at 0.2%. So it's looking better.
Yeah, so this was considered a good report, and as you mentioned, that might tee up those rate cuts from the Fed. They're having their annual meeting this week in Wyoming, so do you think this is going to be on the topic of conversation?
Well, they're not making a decision on cutting interest rates today. That won't come until next month. They're meeting, they're talking about things, but they're, that's for late September, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a while. They are meeting, yes, they have the conference in Jackson Hole, the annual financial state of the world thing they have out there, and they certainly will talk about it, but it seems obvious that really the only question is how much they'll reduce the rates,
whether. Right. So if the consumer price index being below 3%, sort of a psychological positive, but some Americans not happy about falling inflation?
Well, yes. I mean, this is a headline of an article. Inflation is easing, but Americans still aren't feeling it. This article came out 2 days before the report I just talked about. But the real concern is that prices have gone up already because of past inflation, and they're not going down. It doesn't mean that they're getting lower. And what I have here is a 17.4% increase over the last 5 years for total retail prices. And that means they're just sitting there. They're not going up very much at all anymore, but they're already a bunch higher than they were 5 years ago in most cases. So people are not happy about that. People are supposed to have more money to spend as wages have gone up more than that during that time. But there are, of course, a lot of people who didn't get any wage advantages. We have, it's a lot of individual considerations. If people have been big on eating in restaurants, they may, in particular, end up cutting back, not because they don't have enough money, but because the prices are just getting higher and higher, and they've gone up more than inflation over the past 5 years, both fast food and sit-down places. So we have a number that more than $2 trillion Americans put away from stimulus checks and general not being able to spend during the pandemic, but that's supposed to be pretty well gone, according to a Federal Reserve Bank study. So people don't have as much money. We're seeing a goodly number of people switching over from mainstream and premium stores to discount retailers, also buying more generic and store-branded items instead of brand names. It probably, if you consider that if they were taking money out of what they had accumulated during the pandemic and now that's gone, that does decrease their spending ability. So we're probably seeing quite a bit of that. It's still generally healthy. I mean, these are not terrible times, but there are reasons why people would have less money and not be spending as much, even though inflation is down to a very reasonable level.
You mentioned car insurance as one of the prices that's rising. It's really revving up. And some of these companies offer an ability to lower your car insurance, but they're tracking your every move. What is that, and is it worth saving money to let a company do that?
Well, I talked a month or two ago about insurance companies often monitoring your driving in some way. You've given them permission through some fine print, or they've got the things, and that affects your car insurance payments and such. But now we're starting to see, now that they've been caught, so to speak, most car insurance companies are offering some sort of discount if you're willing to officially go on board with being tracked. So that's a possibility there. If you are generally a good, sober, boring driver, that you may be able to get better rates by consenting to that if you want to. Or the other alternative is, and there are ways of finding out if you have been tracked, and a way you can save money is just by finding out what their standards are, what they are looking at, and improve on those things and just quietly go along and expect car insurance rates to be relatively low. But I will warn you that the auto insurance has gone up considerably over the last year, so you may not get much of a discount compared to what it was a year or two ago, but it will be less if you are driving in the ways they want you to. Another thing they consider, I mean, just a list of things they have here are acceleration rate, driving speed, braking speed, cornering, phone distraction, and total miles driven. In a way, that's a good thing, because having total miles, figure that in, because they have not been very good, insurance companies, in the past about charging less for people who put fewer miles. And I'm sitting here with well under the national average because I'm not commuting, and hoping that there would be some advantage there. And there really should be. It's obvious. It's that people who are driving fewer miles should, all other things being equal, pay lower rates. So that's a good thing. But you have a couple of choices here with this thing going on. And if you are a real civil libertarian on these things, you can. There are probably ways in which you can stop them from tracking. You may pay more for insurance then, but there are ways around it.
You've also got an article or a story about, not just for kids anymore, adults are turning to lemonade stands as side hustles. What's this about? They're squeezing the kids out of the lemonade stands?
Well, not quite. Yes. I mean, this was a thing. Yeah, adults. Yes, adults with lemonade stands now squeezing money out of business model usually used to teach children skills. But it's not quite the same. I mean, your children's lemonade stand is, well, a stand in front of their house or whatever. And this is really a food vending business. They mentioned someone who got into it, and they spent about $1,500 on coolers, a lemon slicer, a banner, other supplies and such things. So these things do not look like children's businesses. They're what you might see somebody selling some food items or whatever at a farmer's market or outside an event, to let them, if they let them do that, or getting as close as they're allowed to get and so on. So these are real adult businesses. They're not quite the same, but it is noteworthy that we have a goodly amount of adults selling lemonade. They say that lemons are cheap and they can make some very good money, a very good markup. I'd also suggest that anyone thinking about that also consider popcorn. That used to be an unusually good. I was quite close to getting into the popcorn business at one
really,
time.
Really, James B.
Because the markup. Now, this was after college or around college, and the markup on popcorn is really quite high. You'll have to work, and you'll have to do it right. But if you find the right places you can set up, you can make some awfully good gross margin. Like if you sell $100 on popcorn, and you're about 75 of that should be at least non-infrastructure profit.
Kids, if you're listening, pivot to popcorn if you get muscled out of the lemonade stand. All right.
There are sources. Yeah, there are sources online, right? Yeah, kids can sell popcorn, too. There are sources online about how to run these businesses. And it would seem to me like a hardworking and conscientious 12-year-old could get somewhere with these also.
There you go. Let's get to, before we run out of time, let's get to the prices, stock, oil, precious metal, crypto. How's everything going?
Okay, this past week, gold, or very early this morning, $2,501 plus $59. Yeah, it hit an all-time high in the past week, over $2,500. This was the first week it went over $2,500. It's fallen back a little, but it's still real close. Silver, $28.91, up $1.08, ratio 86.5 to 1. That's still a high ratio. That means silver is still underpriced by the last decade or so, but it did go up. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 40,660. That's up 1162 over the past week. It was a great week. Now, higher than before the big weekly drop that was 2 weeks ago. It's now more than regained that, and it's about a little over 500 short of an all-time high there. NASDAQ, 17,632 plus 887. This was the best week NASDAQ has had since I started reporting them. It's obviously overcome a lot of AI problems and perception problems. I think it's other areas of technology that are supporting it. There's still a lot of perceived problems with artificial intelligence. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, $76.21, down $1.31. It really hasn't changed at all at the pump at the places I'm seeing. And it's not surprising because on the economic report I read you before, gasoline had a change of zero, not even a tenth of a percent either way. So it's really, it's just sitting there. It could improve a little, but not much. Bitcoin, $58,666. That's up 91. That's a quiet week by Bitcoin standards, but there was some up and down. There were $2,000 days both ways. British pound, 1.2966, up almost 2 cents. Euro, 1.1032, up a little over a penny. Both of these, the economies of the countries involved are looking better, and it was generally a down week for the dollar, a down month, actually. Japanese 100 yen stayed at 68 cents, so they seem to have got their adjustments in. Overall, especially the NASDAQ and gold were strong, but so were the other things as well. But the dollar is weak, so the downside is things you import may start creeping up in price.
All right. James B. Huntington joins us every Monday for a local look at the economy with Workshop Live. James B., thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim.
Sorry, cut you off there. Thank you, listeners, as well, James. Dolly is, don't deny Dolly. We'll take a break, and when we come back, tackling the issue of food insecurity as a food bank influencer. We'll explain after this.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl, and the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On Saturday, comedian and self-described social justice warrior Christina Wong will present her work in progress entitled Christina Wong Hashtag Food Bank Influencer. That's at the Catskill Art Space, and it's a benefit for A Single Bite, A Single Bite is the Sullivan County nonprofit that provides free meals to local children and families, teaches young people to care about the food they eat and where it comes from, and they also collaborate with schools, pantries, food banks, and other organizations to provide access to healthy, locally grown food. I spoke to Audrey Garo of A Single Bite, Sally Wright of Catskill Art Space, and Christina Wong about this event. Christina, I wanted to ask you first, what's a food bank influencer?
Yeah, what is a food bank influencer? It's a tongue-in-cheek moniker that I sort of came up with when I became really obsessed with my local food bank in Los Angeles, and I had fallen down a rabbit hole in the pandemic of watching people unbox literally everything, and I thought, you know, it was such a they were opening things they had purchased, and it was such like a for them like excess, and I was like, well, why don't I show everyone what you can get at my food bank? This is the true secret supermarket sweep, and so I started to call myself a food bank influencer, and then decided to make a show about emergency food, which is not necessarily the sexiest thing you can make a show about, because most adult movies are never shot. They'll find places to shoot adult movies everywhere, but never never a food bank. So the task is not to shoot an adult movie in a food bank. The task is to make food banks sexy in this show. The premise starts as.
Yeah. So this is a work in progress. So
yes.
And it's also an immersive experience. Can you explain to folks a little bit about what they can expect?
Well, it starts with me talking about how I was up to write a Broadway musical. It was a very short-lived search process. I was quickly eliminated and did not get that job. But you know what? I am going to make that musical happen anyway, is sort of the idea. And so with the help of karaoke and my audience as my ensemble, we are going to sing a lot of rewritten pop songs that celebrate the food bank, but also teach us a lot about the politics of why food banks have to exist and the situation of food insecurity in this country. So, and that's the sense in which it's immersive. The audience can be expected to maybe hum along if they feel like it.
Karaoke can solve all problems.
Yes, totally.
Audrey, how did you come to connect with Christina and her work as a food bank influencer?
To Dr. David Milch, who supports En Garde Arts in the city, which is an organization that Christina has been working with, and Catskill Art Space, for really envisioning a way to connect not only organizations that he is personally committed to, but also organizations that can help each other. So the symbiotic relationship, the possibilities between A Single Bite, as an organization in Sullivan County, serving people with food insecurity, and also CAS, where performing arts, fine arts, the center of arts, really, especially in Livingston Manor in the county, were able to bring Christina to this county, help her to develop this show that she's beautifully described, but also raise awareness for the challenges that 1 in 5 of our kids, sadly, don't get enough healthy food to eat on a regular basis. So we like to say hunger is not anything to laugh at, but Christina really is a person that we can enjoy her humor and also the message.
And Sally, Kaz, known for all types of emerging and established artists, all types of contemporary art practices.
Kaz is proud to expand on its legacy of offering residency programs to artists in a variety of mediums. And in this way, we are pleased to invite Christina Wong for our first performing arts residency. And doing so, she will have the time and space to workshop this new piece, but also deepen her understanding of the landscape here in Sullivan County and what food insecurity looks like in a rural place, because it is markedly different than that in our major urban centers. So we are so pleased that she will have this time and space to workshop the work and deepen her understanding of our community, and then present it to everyone at large on August 24th.
Sally, for you as Catskill Artspace, not just hosting another organization to have, you know, their fundraiser, but really partnering with them and including your mission as part of it.
Well, I think the world of A Single Bite and Audrey and Sims and Kirsten and the work that they are doing in tackling this very vital and important issue around hunger in our community. And I believe that the arts and culture are a tremendous means for social engagement and transformation. So I am so pleased to work with them and amplify them and their message, and also amplify the impact that culture has in our community in so many different ways. I truly believe it to be transformative, and I'm so excited to work with them in this way.
We haven't. This is building on our history of offering residency programs to artists in a different mediums and fields. And we were so glad to be able to give Christina the time and space to workshop this piece that will precede her culminating performance. So in that time, she'll, of course, be able to rehearse and deepen her craft, but also learn more about what food insecurity looks like here in Sullivan County. Rural food insecurity is markedly different than that you would find in our major urban centers. And CAST prides itself on being a space to allow artists to have the time and space to deepen this engagement and understanding.
Christina, as Sally mentioned, you're going to be an artist in residency there. How will you use this time to further develop your performance?
Well, I'm going to be meeting with A Single Bite and getting to know their work better and hopefully incorporating some of those details into the work. I've been working on this for over 2 years, this show, and I've been meeting with different large, small, mutual aid individuals, everyone from Jose Andres of World Central Kitchen to people who organize community fridges in their neighborhoods, right? And having conversations with them about their work. And try to incorporate that into the show. But I'll also be putting a lot of the script on its feet. Right now I did a count yesterday, 21 songs. Some of them may not make the cut because of time, but you know, all rewritten to be about food insecurity and, doing no shortage of research about things like the farm bill and just try to figure out how do I talk about this in a way that, you know, doesn't put everybody to sleep. So that's the task is you can peek in, you can watch me tear my hair out and try to put the show together. And then on the 24th, we're actually showing it for the public, with a reception beforehand, to benefit A Single Bite if you're able to purchase tickets for that.
Are you hoping to incorporate some audience input into the final product?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the most useful thing, is to hear how it's going over, because so much of it's not like I have the privilege of like, oh, another loving audience has shown up every day in my living room as I try to figure this out, right? You know, so it's a lot of me poring over no shortage of books. There aren't that many books on this topic, but I've read, I think, most of them. And trying to figure out this how to make this a narrative show that has some semblance of a plot. So yeah, the audience is so important.
It sounds like it's a challenging thing to crack. I mean, you can find this type of humor in other areas, politics or, you know, and other types of issues. But as you mentioned, food banks, very particular. Is that a big challenge for you?
Oh, it's so much so. I think I was like, okay, it's one thing to love your local food bank. And I had many moments where I'm like, should this have just been a brochure? Like, not a whole show. But it's a really kind of, this research, like I've said, has taken me everywhere from policy issues to understanding Ronald Reagan's presidency, and how his policy shifts, led to a wealth gap in which people could not get enough of the food they needed from public benefits and needed to rely on supplemental food, which would come from food banks. So it's taken me that far to sort of the politics of the fundraising, that the food banks have to endure, to some of the corporate money that both supports food banks, but in their own politics and in their own and how some of those corporations that support food banks have employees that they themselves are on food stamps, right? So there's just all these ironies and things to comb through and unfold that I'm trying to tell in this show, but also find humor, a lot of it at the expense of myself and the things I had to do in my 20s to get free food.
Audrey, do you think that approaching this issue from a humorous perspective will help just sort of broaden the lens for folks who, of course, you know, with their involvement with A Single Bite are concerned about food insecurity, but this can help broaden and bring this to more people?
Yeah, I have to point out that the health of a community relies on many factors, but ready access to nutritional food for everyone, and that being a right, we believe a right, is so integral to people having the best quality of life that they possibly can. And so for us as A Single Bite being a food support agency, and in our case, Christina's talking about food banks, but it's that concept of food that starts out either donated or purchased or that the USDA supports access to, being actually the food systems that exist to get that food the last mile, which is really what A Single Bite does. We actually take all that food that comes from the food bank through our food hub. It goes to food pantries from our location. We prepare meals at our location. There are many forms that food can take, and many people involved in delivering that product to people who basically would go hungry or certainly not have the kind of nutrition in their daily diets if it weren't for these food assistance programs.
Sally, Christina's engagement will also include a youth workshop with CAS Kids. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So CAS Kids provides free arts education to children in the school months after school and in the summer in a more intensive format. And we are so pleased Christina will be leading a workshop for our kids that combines art-making processes as well as performance art. I think Christina can speak to what she has planned better, but it is worth noting that this will take place on Tuesday, August 20th at 9:30 a.m. and is completely free and open to all children of all ages.
Audrey, let's remind folks where they can get more information.
We're grateful to Christina for taking the time to learn about what food insecurity looks like in Sullivan County and for offering this opportunity for us to raise funds to support A Single Bite. Cass, for hosting this amazing performance that we're really looking forward to on Saturday, August 24th. There is a private reception where Christina will meet some folks and say hello before she gets ready for her performance. We're asking for a donation for cocktails and a reserved seat to the performance, which starts at 7 p.m. at CAS in Livingston Manor. Please visit asinglebite.org, or you can go to the Catskill Art Space website and get all the information as well about Christina's residency and also her performance.
And Food Bank Influencer Performance is presented in partnership with Catskill Art Space, the Dr. David M. Milch Foundation, and On Guard Arts. More information at catskillartspace.org and asinglebite.org. More information about Christina at christinawong.com. Christina
with a K. Christina with a K.
Christina with a K. Christina Audrey Garrow from A Single Bite and Sally Wright from CAS. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. The Chandelier Music Festival is celebrating its 31st season of presenting internationally renowned classical artists from around the world. Tomorrow, it's an evening of chamber music with Dan Ernest and Paul Staroba. Dan has been in demand as a freelance musician since moving to New York City in 2004 from his home state of Wisconsin to attend the Manhattan School of Music. He's found a home in orchestras of many Broadway shows, including Les Miserables and Miss Saigon. And while he stays busy as a performer, he's also a private trumpet instructor at the United Nations International School. And he joins us this morning along with Classical Kit. Dan, Kit, good morning.
Good morning. So happy to be here.
Yeah. Hi, Dan. So I'm looking forward to, you know, to hearing you and Paul tomorrow at 8 at Chandelier. Could you tell us a little bit about the program that we can expect tomorrow?
Sure. Well, I really chose a lot of pieces that I think have beautiful melodies. So the first piece is going to be by Peter Schickley, who a lot of people know from his pen name of PDQ Bach. Mm-hmm. And he wrote kind of an interesting piece that's a part of a three-movement work, but it's called A Dance of Undisclosed Nationality. So he said that he came up with an idea, and the ideas kind of sounded like a mishmash of a lot of different nationalities. So that's kind of a fun piece. And then I chose a couple of songs to play on trumpet. And one of them is from Robert Schumann's Mithrin set. Mm-hmm. And then the Rachmaninoff vocalise.
Oh, nice.
And then we'll end the first act with a couple of first act. I'm talking like a Broadway musician now, but the first half with a few standard trumpet pieces, The Legend by George Enescu and The Concerto by Alexander Aratunian.
Nice.
And the Aratunian is especially interesting because even though it was written in the mid 20th century, it kind of uses the harmonic minor scale instead of a lot of times in mid-20th century music. They use very, very dissonant chords to try and find new sounds. But the Aratunian uses the scale, which I think makes it a lot easier for a first-time listener.
Nice. You know, so I'm wondering about transcriptions, because actually I was listening to the vocalese last night. You know, but not for trumpet. And do you do the transcriptions yourself, or are there transcriptions out there for a lot of these works that were not composed for trumpet?
Right. I usually read them. Well, with the vocal pieces, I'm reading them right off the vocal score and playing them in the same key. Mm-hmm. But the vocalese, I think I have a transcription that's originally written for cello. Uh-huh. And I was really inspired by, there's a Russian trumpet player named Sergei Nikarikov who plays a lot of cello, even concerti on flugelhorn.
Interesting.
And so that's where I kind of got the idea to perform this piece.
Well, I know that Peter Schickley composed a lot for bassoon, and I'm wondering, is the piece you're going to be playing of his, was it composed for trumpet and piano, or
Composed both for trumpet and piano, and it was premiered by a trumpet player named Raymond Mace, who was a teacher at Juilliard and played principal trumpet in the ballet for many years, and Mr. Schickley himself.
Okay.
So I'm really looking forward to that. That's actually, it'll be the first time I've performed that piece.
That's good. I have never heard that one, but I'm a very big fan of his work. It's just, it's so inventive,
right.
And inventive, and a lot of it is really, really fun. So,
you know, my favorite PDQ Bach piece has to be Lincoln Portrait. Have you ever heard that?
No,
I
haven't.
Bach Portrait. Bach Portrait's a spoof on Lincoln Portrait, so it's with orchestra and narrator. But he got translations of some of Bach's letters where he was complaining about all this stuff. So you'll have to try it's pretty funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, that whole side of him, it was like he let his humor just kind of, what's that old expression, let your freak flag fly. That's what he did with PDQ Bach, you know. We're in Woodstock mode here. It was the anniversary last week, so forget that. Now you've done a lot of freelance stuff playing different genres of music. Could you tell me a little bit about Paul as well and how you connected with him and what his background is?
Sure. Paul and I kind of started our Broadway careers together with a show almost 20 years ago now called Grey Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a show about Little Edie.
Edith Bouvier Beals, the sisters.
Yeah, the sisters in Long Island who are kind of recluse but original. And Albert Maysles made a documentary about them, and it kind of almost started the reality genre of video. And but that's where Paul and I got our start together. And actually, in the second half of the concert tomorrow, we're going to be playing probably one of the most well-known songs from that show called Another Winter.
Oh, okay.
And so Paul and I have known each other for a long time, and then he ended up being the music director of a show called A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder that won a Tony Award for Best Musical, I think about 11 years ago, it started in 2013, and then the Tonys were on in 2014. So we've worked together quite a bit. Right now he's playing a commercial show called Back to the Future.
Okay. Yeah, flying cars and everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a big, big show.
Yeah. Okay, so...
But we're really looking forward to coming and playing some chamber music tomorrow.
That'll be a nice change for you guys.
Exactly. In
a much more intimate setting, playing at Chamberlain, mm-hmm. Than playing on Broadway. Let me just let our listeners know that that's going to be tomorrow night at 8 p.m. at the Sunset Concert Pavilion at the Chandelier Music Festival. And I believe it's chandeliermusic.org.
Chandelier.org.
Maybe that's correct.
Chandelier.org. Sorry. Leave out the music. You'll get that when you get there. So, if people would like to get more information about tomorrow night and about the other programs at Chandelier, they can go to chandelier.org. So, Dan, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us this morning, and I'll look forward to seeing you and Paul perform tomorrow night.
Thank you so much. I look forward to meeting you.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Dan. Bye-bye. And more information about Dan on his Instagram at Dan Ernest, URNESS. Hit 31st anniversary of Chandelier. It's underway, and great to, again, have this international music right here in our backyard.
Yes, and there's been, a nice assortment of things so far and more to come. I'll be back here tomorrow to talk to you about this coming Saturday's concert.
Classical Kit does not rest when there's classical music about. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you. Okay. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A program reminder, tonight is the beginning of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. We'll be bringing you that coverage live from NPR News beginning at 9. We'll bring you that coverage all week long, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at 9 as well. Scott Detrow hosts NPR's Democratic National coverage. Listen live on air tonight at 9 or stream it online at wjffradio.org. Radio Catskill is your NPR station. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at wjffradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Truth, independence, fairness, transparency, respect, excellence. NPR. Donate. Thanks.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, mostly cloudy and humid with a couple of showers and a heavy thunderstorm, especially look for that later in the day. Some of these heavier storms can bring flash flooding and damaging winds. Today's high 73. Still could see a heavy thunderstorm or two around this evening with a passing shower late. Tomorrow, afternoon shower in spots, high of only 66. Much cooler Wednesday, a high of only 62. Looks like partly sunny, 69 so far for the forecast on Thursday. On Point is next. This is Radio Catskill. It's 11 o'clock.